Hello, this is Lois Pausch reading the Vermilion County News for Friday, March the 3rd, 2017. And I will start with the article with the headline, DACC Child Care Center Seeks Supplies. Datelight, Danville. The lack of state funding at Danville Area Community College has affected the college's Child Development Center, prompting its staff to reach out for help with essential supplies for its classrooms. The state budget has affected all of us, Director Anna Nasser said. If the college doesn't get money, we don't get money. Nasser sent out an email in January to parents whose children attend the center, asking them to look around their home for spare items or if they were willing to purchase or donate items to the center. She said it's the first time in the 28 years she's been involved with the center that she's had to reach out for help. We use so many things, and we're looking to bring costs down, she said. After Nasser sent out the email the second week of January, a parent and Danville District 118 employee, Lori Johnson, shared that email with faculty district-wide. Soon, the donations began rolling in. My daughter goes to DACC's Child Development Center. She's been going there since she was one, Johnson said. They're in a rough time right now, and I want to try to help them because it's a wonderful place for children. The Danville High School Library Club, as well as District 118 School Board candidate Shannon Schroeder, donated piles of bottled glue, aluminum foil, crayons, colored pencils, markers, and construction paper. The Library Club collected money, and then they bought some stuff, Nasser said. In addition, Mark Denman and Mead Park Elementary Schools donated school supplies, she said. Johnson said the individual teachers throughout District 118 have been donating classroom supplies, such as construction paper, glue, puzzles, and bubble wands. At the end of the year, teachers throw out a lot of stuff, especially if they're moving to a different classroom or school, she said. Nasser said she's grateful for the donations the center has received so far. We're overwhelmed by the help we've received. Parents of past students even have contacted us. This is why we love our community, she added. People come out of nowhere to help you. Donations of supplies still are needed. All of the stuff goes straight to the children, Nasser said. Children are our priority, and it's hard when we don't have everything. The items still being sought include tissues, that's Kleenex, glue bottles or glue sticks, clothespins, outdoor balls made of rubber, yarn any color, large construction paper, markers, crayons, tissue paper of any color, glitter glue, pipe cleaners, shipping packing tape, scotch tape, chalk, felt any color, school-age board games, cloth any kind, gift cards to Schick's Office Supply, Arnold's, Walmart, Meijer, Dollar General, and Family Dollar. The next is an article with the headline, Soprano Brings Beautiful Women to Life. Dateline Danville. Songs about spirited women will take the spotlight at the next Danville Symphony Orchestra concert. Soprano Jamie Leonard, a native of Indiana, will bring the characters to life in the program, Beautiful Women. The concert will be at 7:30 p.m. March 11th in Dick Van Dyke Auditorium at Danville High School. Leonard will sing four arias, each 5 to 6 minutes long. Two are in English, one in German, and one in Italian. All the women I'm singing are spunky, full of life. It's really fun, she said in a telephone interview from her New York City home. As a coloratura soprano, Leonard said she sings high and fast, telling the stories of ingenues, being wooed or saved or romanced. The DSO and music director, Jeremy Swirling, will be featured independently as well. For hundreds of years, the beauty and fortitude of women have moved history's most outstanding composers to create a massive collection of works featuring their favorite lady loves. Leonard said she'll sing Rossini's Una Voce Poco Fa from The Barber of Seville the first time she's tackled that number. It's just full of spunk, she said. When I sing it, I feel like there's a freedom. I feel like I'm flying. Another fun number is Tesori's The Girl in 14G, where she sings the parts of three women who live in an apartment building. She has to jump from one style of singing to another. One character sings naturally, another has an operatic voice, and the third woman sings in jazz style. In addition, she'll sing Mein Herr Marquis, the laughing song from the Johann Strauss classic Die Fledermaus, and the dramatic Glitter and Be Gay from Candide. So much work goes into learning a new piece, she said. Once all those pieces come together, you can really soar. It's fun and rewarding, and it feels like you're flying. Along the way, she hopes to tell some funny stories, she said. The orchestra will perform the colorful and vibrant 20th century masterpiece, La Valse, by Impressionist composer Maurice Ravel, and the contemporary styling of Leonard Bernstein's Symphonic Dances from West Side Story. The West Side Story numbers will have the audience moving in their seats, she said, adding, it drives you from within, and it's really fun. Leonard says she's excited to perform in Danville and is looking forward to meeting with show choir students at Danville High School. As a child, she said, she was eager to soak up anything with the performing arts. A native of Carmel, Indiana, Leonard, 30, also is excited that her parents and other family members will be in the audience that night. Her family has supported her during recitals in school and college, and now they travel to as many of her performances as they can. Leonard holds bachelor's and master's degree in vocal performance from Indiana University Jacobs School of Music. In 2011, she moved to New York City to pursue her dream. She found a good coach and honed her skills in musical theater, opera, jazz, and contemporary repertoire. Just last year, Swirling heard her performing in a show in Massachusetts. He contacted her later, said he loved her voice, and suggested collaborating. She'll meet Swirling for the first time next week. Leonard performed across the country and recently performed the role of Anne Edgerman in Princeton Festival's A Little Night Music. She made her international debut in October 2012 as the voice of Rufus in the European premiere of William Mayer's A Death in the Family in Szeged, Hungary, reprising the role at the Theatre d'Avignon in the summer of 2013. She has received several awards. The DSO also will present a free, no-tickets-required recital and lecture at 7 p.m. Wednesday, March 8th in the lobby of Bremer Conference Center at Danville Area Community College. Four Hands, One Piano will feature Eric Simonson, music teacher at DACC, Jeremy Swirling, and University of Illinois pianists Han Scholl and Meng Chung Chen. They will discuss the life and times of Maurice Ravel, who lived from 1875 to 1937. The lecture recital will spotlight the original Four Hands piano version of the 1990 Ravel composition La Valse. The entire work in its 1920 fully orchestrated version will be performed at the March 11th concert by DSO. A dinner at the Danville Country Club, 2718 Denmark Road, will begin at 5 p.m. March 11th. Reservations are $28 and may be made by calling the club. The public has a chance to meet Swirling during Moments with the Maestro at 6:45 p.m. March 11th in the lobby of Dick Van Dyke Auditorium. Pre-concert refreshments will be available from Picara Bakery. The lobby will open at 6 p.m. The Danville Symphony Orchestra is celebrating its 50th anniversary during the 2016-17 concert season. As an active and professional performing arts organization in Vermilion County, the DSO has been providing performances with world-class guest artists to East Central Illinois and West Central Indiana residents since 1967. In addition, the orchestra bolsters educational outreach by providing young people's concerts reaching more than 3,000 more than 3,000 local students annually. Swirling has conducted the DSO for more than 21 seasons this year, and the ensemble continues to grow musically under his leadership. Tickets are $10 to $35 and may be purchased through the DSO website, www.danvillesymphony.org, or charge by phone at 443-5300. DSO Music Director Jeremy Swirling will present Moments with Maestro at 6:45 p.m. March 11th in the lobby of Dick Van Dyke Auditorium. Most of this information here I have already read. And the next article has the heading, volunteer firefighters train skills. Dateline Danville. Most of the county's many volunteer fire departments will agree they need a little help. The sentiment is shared by the Kickapoo Fire Protection District. On Wednesday evening, volunteer firefighters met for their weekly training, a routine that takes them away from time spent with their jobs, families, businesses, sports, and hobbies. Assistant Fire Chief Randy Schumann said the department takes 450 to 470 calls per year in the county's second largest district, which encompasses Interstate 74 West U.S. Route 150 and Henning Road. Many of those calls are for medical issues or vehicle accidents. Schumann said they have a young roster with newer members who rely on more senior firefighters for guidance. He said they'd like to train their younger ones so their instincts can start to take over on scene. For a department with first responders and EMTs on board, they also have a cadet program for those aged 16 to 18, according to the assistant chief. Learn what you can, observe what you can, and soak all of it in, Schumann said, addressing his crew at the start of the training session. On Wednesday, their department used a vacant house near Vermilion Heights to practice a search and rescue operation. Schumann said training sessions, such as Wednesday's, are crucial. If you get a call for search and rescue on a house fire, this is life or death for possibly the victim and the firefighter, if the firefighter hasn't been trained properly, he said. You never know what you're going to get when the pager goes off. Before entering, firefighters made sure their equipment was ready to go, such as their air pack, a self-contained breathing apparatus. Volunteers also practiced using thermal imaging tools, which can save a lot of time locating a victim inside a house fire. You got to have the right tools, and you got to know how to use the right tools, Schumann said. Having a fire axe on hand can also help with hand sweeping a smoke-filled room during a search. Schumann said firefighters do the search on their hands and knees. You might as well close your eyes, he said. It's that black. Volunteers made several trips inside the house, practicing sweeps in a staggered formation and extracting a 180-pound dummy victim. The senior firefighters counseled the younger ones on keeping in physical contact during their sweeps and using voice commands to stay in touch with one another. A real-life fire scene may likely be chaotic. Near the end of their training, volunteers practiced rescuing one of their own, with Schumann serving as a live victim. Chief Rory Lester pointed out a dragging device is built into their newer jackets, which can help pull a downed firefighter from a fire scene. Lester said the department will seek a bond issue for much-needed equipment upgrades and station renovations. For all the calls they make, Schumann said firefighters might have asked, "Why didn't I receive a bill for the last time you came out?" That's because the fire district is entirely funded by taxpayers. We are a volunteer service operating on taxpayer money, he said. When we go, it's on our own free time. Having a deep roster also is important to volunteer fire departments. Schumann said they don't have to worry about having enough personnel on scene at any time of the day. For calls, all the departments in the county would like to have more volunteers than they have. Schumann said for Kickapoo and several surrounding departments, those interested in becoming a volunteer firefighter should check in at the station during the weekly training session and fill out an application. He added, Kickapoo and most other volunteer departments host their training sessions on Wednesdays, but people can also check by calling the station's main number. The station is at 1717 Oakwood Avenue, and its non-emergency number is 442-2214. We need all the help we can get. And the next article has the headline, Soup Supper Scheduled. Dateline Bismarck, the 10th Annual Community Soup Supper will be 5 to 7 p.m. Sunday at Bismarck United Methodist Church, 115 South Chicago Avenue. A free will offering will be collected. Chili, homemade chicken noodle soup and vegetable soup, along with hot dogs and barbecue, will be available. Carry out is available. The Bismarck Unit of Home and Community Education will meet at 1:30 p.m. Tuesday in Bismarck United Methodist Church Annex, 115 South Chicago Avenue. The lesson topic is Debt, D-E-B-T, Myths. The public is welcome. Register by calling 729-7237. And now for the obituaries. And the first is for Doris M. Hammond of Olivet. She was 88 when she died at 5:30 a.m. on February 27th at Champaign County Nursing Home. A celebration of life service will be held at 10 a.m. on Saturday, March 4th, at Sunset Funeral Home and Cremation Center, 3940 North Vermillion Street, Danville. James Blue will officiate. Interment will be in Sunset Memorial Park. Visitation will be held from 5 to 8 p.m. March 3rd at the funeral home. Memorials may be made to Olivet Church of the Nazarene in Olivet. And the next is for Beverly Jane Starnes. That's S-T-A-R-N-S, 93 of Danville, who died at 6 a.m. on Wednesday, March the 1st at Colonial Manor in Danville. A service to celebrate the life of Beverly Starnes will be held at 2 p.m. on Saturday, March 4th, at Sunset Funeral Home and Cremation Center at 3940 North Vermillion Street in Danville. Cale Boyd will officiate. Visitation will be held from 1 to 2 p.m. prior to the service on Saturday, also at Sunset. In lieu of flowers, memorials may be made to Colonial Manor. And the next is for Charles F. Wright of Danville. He was 89 when he died at 7:10 a.m. on Wednesday, March 1st, at his home. A service to celebrate the life of Charles F. Wright Sr. will be held at 2 p.m. on Monday, March the 6th, at Sunset Funeral Home and Cremation Center at 3940 North Vermillion Street in Danville. Reverend Brian Sampson will officiate. Burial will follow at Sunset Memorial Park. Visitation will be held from 2 to 5 p.m. on Sunday, March 5th, also at Sunset in Danville. And the next is for Nicole M. Bell, 42, of Warrenton, Missouri, who passed away at 5:30 a.m. on Monday, February 27th, at SSM St. Joseph Hospital, St. Charles, Missouri. She was born in Danville. Graveside services will be held at 2 p.m. Saturday, March 4th, at Forest Park Cemetery in Georgetown. And the next is for Viola, V-I-O-L-A, Kachmar, K-A-C-M-A-R, 96, of Gallatin, Tennessee, formerly of Danville, who died at 10:56 a.m. Tuesday, February 28th, at Gallatin Healthcare. A celebration of Viola's life will be held at 11:30 a.m. Saturday, March 4th, at the Northside Church of Christ, 17167 East, 2750 North Road, Bismarck, Illinois. Burial will follow the service in Sunset Memorial Park. Visitation will be from 4 to 7 p.m. Friday, that's today, March 3rd, at Northside Church of Christ. Memorials may be made to the Alzheimer's Association. And the next is for Opal M. Woodyard, 93, of Danville, who died on Tuesday, February 28th. Visitation will be held today, Friday, or is being held right now, at Sunset Funeral Home and Cremation Center, 3940 North Vermillion Street, Danville. Service will be held immediately following at 11 a.m. Entombment will be in Sunset Memorial Park. And the next is for Earl Hood, 53 of Danville, who died March 1st in Danville. Arrangements are pending with Sunset Funeral Home and Cremation Center. And the next is for Charles F. Wright Sr., 89 of Danville, who died on Wednesday, March 1st at his home. Visitation will be on Sunday, March 5th from 2 to 5 p.m. at Sunset Funeral Home and Cremation Center, Danville. His service will be at 2 p.m. on Monday at the funeral home, and burial will be in Sunset Memorial Park. And the next is for Kea, K-E-Y-A, Miller, 45, of Alsip, Illinois, formerly of Danville, died on March 2nd at her residence. Arrangements are incomplete at Leek & Sons Funeral Home. And the next is for Nathan Lewis Robinson, 47, of Columbus, Ohio, formerly of Danville, who died on February 28th. Arrangements are incomplete at Leek and Sons Funeral Home. And the next is for Nicole M. Bell of Warrenton, Missouri. Hold on a minute here. I've already read the one for Nicole. She died on Monday at St. Joseph Hospital in St. Charles, Illinois, Missouri, I'm sorry. Graveside services are at 2 p.m. tomorrow at Forest Park Cemetery in Georgetown. Sunset's Houghton Leisure Funeral Home, Georgetown, was entrusted with the arrangements. And now there's an editorial with the headline, Another Failure in Springfield. The stage was set. Preliminary action looked good as pieces of the Illinois Senate's grand bargain won bipartisan approval. Wednesday was to be the day at least one house in the Illinois General Assembly passed a budget after 2 years of waiting. But then, another failure in Springfield. Depending on whom you listen to, the blame can be placed on Republican Governor Bruce Rauner or on Democrats who want a permanent income tax increase. As if anything in Illinois politics could be labeled as permanent. Rauner has had 2 years to come up with a balanced budget that addresses the state's massive underfunded pension obligation. That hasn't happened as he and House Speaker Michael Madigan, a Democrat, played a game of chicken over state finances. So members of the Senate took it upon themselves to come up with a compromise to resolve the issue. There are a series of bills involved, and Senate President John Cullerton, also a Democrat, said he wanted bipartisan support or the deal would fall apart. It appears it has fallen apart, mainly because Rauner decided to become involved before the deal was done. Political considerations have replaced pragmatic action in regard to the state budget. This stopped being about the budget and became a political power struggle long ago. Votes came after consideration of legislators' re-election and not what was best for their constituents. That's the wrong way to vote. Loyalty to party serves no one but those who profit from such blind obedience. Residents in Illinois must become more engaged, learn the facts involved, and voice their opinions to the lawmakers, who supposedly were elected to represent their interests in Springfield, and then reward those at the ballot box who do the right thing and work hard to replace those who put partisanship above the public good. Cullerton hasn't given up on the grand bargain as yet, but the vital signs of this deal don't look good, and even if this plan should pass, it still will have to clear Madigan's house before it could go into effect. If Rauner and legislative leaders cared about Illinois residents, this issue would have been resolved long ago. It's obvious they do not. And the next, another news memory, they call this, has the headline, Police Agencies' Efforts Aimed at Dangerous Impaired Driving. The winter, mild as it has been, is nearing an end. That means a decreasing likelihood for icy or snowy driving conditions. Better yet, March can be a month when mild weather becomes the norm, and there are plenty of things to draw people out of their winter cocoons for celebration. The basketball tournaments, Hoosier Hysteria and March Madness, are among those reasons for springtime fun and frolic, and St. Patrick's Day approaches as well. March 17th will be here before you know it. We don't mean to get preachy here, but along with March and mild weather comes heavier road traffic and the increasing chance for vehicular crashes. Unfortunately, many of those are caused by dangerous or impaired driving. And that's why we're pleased to know that the Indiana State Police is joining with 250 state and local law enforcement agencies to increase education and enforcement around dangerous and impaired driving. Beginning Friday through March 26th, ISP states that officers across the state will conduct high-visibility patrols specifically designated to identify and intercept those driving aggressively and under the influence. The state enforcement effort is supported by federal funding allocated to the state police from the Traffic Safety Division of the Indiana Criminal Justice Institute. Troopers will work overtime to conduct patrols and sobriety checkpoints. According to the Institute, last year in March, there were 495 alcohol-related crashes across Indiana, resulting in 231 injuries and 11 fatalities. During the same period, crash reports indicate 1,128 collisions occurred due to dangerous driving, resulting in 260 injuries and 2 fatalities. Dangerous driving includes factors such as speed too fast for weather conditions, fatigued driving, and distracted driving. Crashes resulting from dangerous and impaired driving are preventable. There are simple steps to follow. Among them, do not drive impaired, follow traffic laws, do not use a cell phone to text while driving. If you're out on the road and see a drunken driver or someone driving dangerously on the road, call 911. Law enforcement officials will be out in force in coming weeks trying to help the cause. We encourage drivers to join the effort and be safe on the roadways. And this comes from the Tribune Star of Terre Haute, Indiana. Oh my. Okay. Let's see what I can find here. Hold on just a minute. And the next has the headline, Indiana Church Takes Ash Wednesday to the Streets. Jeffersonville, Indiana. Those taking part in Ash Wednesday in Jeffersonville, witnessed a new, more convenient option for participating in the religious rite this year. Followers of various religions mark the beginning of Lent with a ceremony of prayer, followed by a blot of ash being placed on their foreheads. It's the day that we recognize that we are, in fact, mortal. The Reverend Daniel Dittmer of Wall Street United Methodist Church said, We remember that we are dust, and to dust we shall return. Rather than having congregates gather in the normal church setting, Dittmer decided to take to the streets for ashes to go. She stood on the corner of Spring and Chestnut Streets, offering a drive-through avenue for residents to receive ashes. They can pull into the parking lot and stop. They can walk up, or I suppose they can stop at the stop sign, Dittmer said, as the outreach got underway. Since this is my first year here, I'm sort of trying to scope out where the best spot would be. I thought this would be a good first try. Dittmer was previously a pastor at North United Methodist Church, where she first started utilizing ashes to go. This has been Lois Pausch reading the Vermilion County News for Friday, March the 3rd, 2017. I look forward to reading with you again soon.